Hi everyone. I saw some of you in Ballyfermshire last weekend. First of all, thanks for inviting me to read tonight. Can you hear me okay? I love that writing gives people a way to express themselves and gives them a voice, and I think everyone here has found that voice because they write. For me, it helps me to make sense of things, and sometimes it can even fix something that's broken. So I'm going to read a few poems for you. The first one is about growing up on a farm in Wexford, where I'm originally from. I'm one of seven children, so as you can imagine, it was very hectic. But I remember I used to follow my father around the farm, thinking I was helping. But looking back now, I'm sure I slowed down the whole operation. So, follow me. Slap of hand-me-down red wellies on the backs of my bare legs as I stumble over dried tracks on the cart road, struggling to keep up with my father's march, his stubbled jaw clenched. I wince at a stone in my boot, but keep it to myself, afraid that slowing him down would be a sending home offence. I left the farm behind me when I was about 17 or 18 to go to college and, you know, all of that. I lived away out of Ireland as well, far away hills, as my father would say. He used to always tell us when we were going to Dublin to mind the big buses. But a few years ago I was at home again, and my father rang from his mobile, and he was down the field somewhere, and he was very sweet on the phone, so I knew there was something up. But anyway, the calves were out in the neighbour's corn, so I was the only one around and I had to go and help him. So it was a tug back into my childhood. So that's what this poem is about. It's chasing calves. Mammy drops us off at Tilly Redmond's field. We climb through the red rusting gate, head for the corner at an even jog, hoping they'll come easy. We get them rounded up, heading nicely for the gate. Then at the last minute, one scares and they scatter. At the last resort, Daddy throws his cap and swears. After a few laps, we get them back and out onto the road. We jog along with them, three of us ahead and three behind. The trick, John Martin, who works for us, says, is to set a nice easy pace so we can keep up and they stay calm, more predictable. We finally turn them into the highlands, to fresh grass. That'll keep them happy for a while, Daddy says, his elbows on the gate watching them. Mammy picks us up and we head home, red-cheeked, jumpers tied around our waists, starving for supper. When I was young, I used to collect fancy paper. I think it's starting to come back now. You know that paper with the funny smell off it, perfumed, and they have those letter writing sets again now, I think, too. Anyway, this is it's a poem about that, but it's also a poem spoke about the loss of innocence of children. Fancy paper. I collected fancy paper. The scented stuff was the best. I kept it in a biscuit tin under my bed. At night, when I couldn't sleep, I hid under the blankets with my blue and yellow torch and my tin. I wrote things down, drew arrows through hearts, a house with two windows and a winding path to the door. a little girl in a skirt with nice hair that curled up at the sides. I didn't draw a monster with a big nose and bad breath that ate little girls, or a kitten trapped under a bed, or a red bull stamping on my head. I didn't know how to. Did you ever look at someone, a sports star or a nice girl in the bar or whoever, and you wished you could be more like them, that you wished you could be better or prettier or better at sport? I think we can all relate to that, that we see these people as sort of heroes and sort of untouchable. For me, at some stage, or probably now again, probably saw my mother as that. I wanted to be grown up like her. So that's what this is about. It's called Imitation. I trudged through the winter sales, trying on one coat after another, but none look right on me. In the mirror, I see myself younger, flat-chested, ugly, in Mammy's good wool coat. Too big for me. The weight of it and the smell of her tweed perfume. Familiar, reassuring. I remember her putting her coat on over normal clothes on her way out the door to a funeral, brushing her short greying hair roughly in the antique mirror over the fire. I imagine her at the grave, respectable, her gold peacock brooch pinned to the front, shaking hands, sorry for your troubles. I soldier on, determined to look like a proper woman should. I mentioned that I lived in Holland and Germany for 7 or 8 years, and my mother used to bring me to the airport, and you can imagine with 7 children there wasn't much of that quality time that they call now. So time in the car was really the longest time I think we ever spent alone in each other's company, and probably to date it is the longest time. And so this is what this is about. Leaving ritual. Mammy used to drive me back to the airport. By Tinnacross, 2 miles down the road from home, she'd have launched into a story that I knew would last for most of the journey. It didn't leave much quiet time, which was grand, because it didn't really suit us anyway. She let me have the radio on in the background. Normally, she'd turn it off, say she couldn't hear herself thinking. It was almost never just the two of us. It felt uneasy. Yet, we found a familiarity, came up with a pattern to follow. We didn't delve into heavy conversations about depression or drinking too much. The odd time we wobbled across the line by accident, a side comment in a bigger story dropped in and left hanging. The nerves wouldn't be good with her, she'd say, voice low. Then she'd move on in her normal voice. I observed our ceremony of leaving. Tea and scones in the airport canteen after checking in. Talk about how long the flight would take and when I'd be back to the flat. Then Mammy waving me off at security. An awkward hug before I crossed. A few years ago, lots of my friends and family started to have children. And I suppose this poem, next poem, is an effort to put into words the kind of amazement that I felt when I met them for the first time. It's called Borrowed Memory. You come in the night, a whisper first. We gather round you like moths, enamoured by your tiny fingers that curl into tiny hands, your soft skin, eggshell white, your eyelids thin as rice paper, and your bright eyes. Later, when you come home, your mother lets me hold you, passes you to me, a tiny parcel. I feel your bones moving. You remind me of a robin, delicate, needing everything. I feel your heart in the quiet kitchen, and mine jumps to keep up. The same children or grandchildren from my parents is the topic of the next poem as well. When I was growing up, my father and my mother, I suppose, would have been fairly strict with us. So, and you know, my father would have been a traditional farmer and wouldn't have really been down on the ground playing with us. So when the first grandchildren came on the scene, I was amazed at first, and then it was really nice to see how he was able to connect with them. And I saw a really different side to him. So that's what this is about. Daddy. Your grandchild waddles across the carpet in your direction, clings to your knees as you read the farmer's journal. Stern at first, your face softens. You can't resist the big eyes that insist on your attentions. You haul her up, sing, "How much is that doggy?" She does the dog sounds, a well-practiced duet. I notice your hair, parted to one side, swept across as always, scarcer now. I don't remember you singing to me or holding me like that. Later, I find a faded picture of me as a baby, propped on your knee, your arm around me protectively. Though old and blurred, I see it clearly now. Winston Churchill talked about the black dog, and there's been lots of terms since for trying to describe or trying to get a hand on depression, and unfortunately we're quite familiar with it in this country. So I've had my own experiences, and I'd like to dedicate this poem to anybody who's struggling to get out of the black, as we call it. Called Black. Black drenches her feet, swirls around like it will swallow her whole, to inky dark that traps thoughts dead in their tracks, paralyzes even when she sees a way out. So what is she to be complaining about? She hears them whisper in spits of something like envy, masked as indifference on their stupid faces, drinking tea from china cups like they're fucking queens. They don't know the black hours before dawn, when sleep won't come, when thoughts play havoc with her head, and she'd sell her heart just to get some peace. They don't know how blank she feels, how she sticks her nails in her arms, leaves a mark just to feel something, pulls her sleeve down to cover up. They don't know the worry she feels, that they'll say she's making it up just to get the attention she craves. She tells herself sometimes it's all lies, wishes it was. They don't know how she drinks to drown out the voices that whine in her head, how she smiles at handsome men and they smile back and come to talk like she knew they would. She pretends not to notice their player eyes darting around the bar for a better catch. She laughs and touches their arm and chest enough to reel them in, to get their affection for the night at least. They don't know how she stood on a balcony wall high above the cobbled streets, only the night porter banging on the door gets her down. She doesn't know if she would have jumped, thinks she would have. She knows now how to keep steady most of the time, how to retreat when she feels it coming on, to give herself space to write or paint it out, to scream and cry and laugh hysterically. She sees others fall away into the black where she was and where she still remembers. Sometimes in her dreams she's there again. She screams, but no one hears. She calls him then in the middle of the night. He listens to her scared voice, tells her it's okay. He wishes he was there and so does she. She knows, believes, the black can't get her now. I guess we all have experiences or bits of our lives that we love if we could get Tippex and cover them over or delete them, rewind time and go back to being a child. That's what this poem is about. Return to me. I don't want to hear your words anymore that force their way in and down my throat like tar funneled into me by a raving mob of men frothing at the mouth. I don't want to answer you anymore with words that turn me inside out, blood dripping from my sockets like tears. I want to be five, to dance in the dew-damp grass at the back of our house, to lie in my belly, watch ladybirds and spiders crawling in the undergrowth. I want to hold my breath, to freeze a perfect moment, no ugly scars. I want to see my reflection in the rain. Just read a couple more. A few months ago I went to an etching class in Dingle. I don't know if any of you have done etching, but the process of it is amazing. It's we took a copper plate. You use a copper plate and you had to do all kinds of processes to it before you could actually get a picture from it. But part of the process was that you put it on a hot plate and you put black wax on it to cover it over. And when the black wax was dry, you actually burned the wax. It's like you're punishing it or something. And the reason that you put the black, which I find so interesting, is that so you can see clearly what you're scraping into the surface. So you could really make it quite a good analogy for life and everything else. So I'll just read that. It's called Etching Class. I scratch away the black wax. expose you in the bare copper beneath, your breasts dipping as you reach a jug into a pool of water. I leave you in the back room of the workshop overnight, in a deep bath of acid, to deepen the lines so your curves will stand out. I don't come back to get you. Something keeps me away. Maybe I'm ashamed to bring you out, to let you be seen. I imagine someone finds you. Her fingers hold the edges of the plate as she lays you down, pushes you through the printing press. Finally, you are revealed. I suppose something that keeps me going and all of that is a belief in myself somewhere, and a kind of determination, I suppose, to remain true to myself and to who I am. So that's the last poem that I'll read for you. I just want to say thanks for listening, and it's been a pleasure. It's called Who Am I? Who am I? I am a woman. I am a writer. I love the sea. I love walking up mountains when it's so cold that I can haul my breath in front of me. I am a sensitive soul. I am a thousand thoughts jumbled up together. I am tired. I am pretty. I am stuck. I am a meltdown in the frozen foods aisle on a Tuesday evening when I've let myself get over hungry. I am constantly trying to find me. I play the sad girl. I play the sorry girl. I am allergic to wasps and wheat. I feel alive when I sing. I feel embarrassed about my body. I am shyer than I used to be. I am afraid of the dark. I mostly see the worst case scenario. I have secrets. I always analyse everything to death. I own a juicer. I have a part of me that is never at ease. I eat well. I don't want to give up. I keep fighting for us. I am lonely. I am lost. I don't know where I belong. I need a fright to make me see what I want. I hate myself sometimes. I want to not be here anymore sometimes. I feel like a few quickly swallowed drinks would give me a break from it all. I get obsessed with things. I feel like I'm living a borrowed life. I am floating around, dreaming up the life I would have, should have. I own a car and a guitar. I wish I was better, braver. I wish I could let go. I always feel like I have to prove myself. I feel like I'm holding my breath. I wish I knew how to get to the next step. I wish it wasn't always such a struggle. I wish I had more time. I wish I could see your heart. I wish I could let myself be happy. I am a warrior. I am a warrior. I have writer's block. I live in a tower. I am waiting for my life to arrive instead of living it now. I feel like I'm missing a part of myself. I ask hard questions. I am determined. I am a woman. Thank you very much.